Money FM 89.3, best of workday afternoon.
You're on Money FM 89.3. I'm Clarissa Monter for the workday afternoon. National University Hospital has reported they receive 100 new patients at the patient referral clinic for headache disorders every month. Additionally, the lifetime prevalence of headache in Singapore has been reported to be 82.7%. These numbers are startling and begs the question, why is the occurrence so common in our country? We talk about headaches next on Money FM 89.3.
Health Suite on Money FM 89.3.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health Suites on Money FM 89.3. I'm Clarissa Montero for the workday afternoon. Joining me on the phone to discuss the high prevalence of headaches in Singapore is Dr. Wee Chee Kiong, senior consultant, neurologist and founder of Capernaum Neurology. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Hi, good afternoon, Clarissa. How are you doing?
I'm good, and it's a pleasure to have you. Let's jump right in. And can you tell us what causes for headaches are there? Why do we get them?
Well, it's a bit of a complicated question. So let's start from the basics. So when we talk about headaches, it is actually what we refer to as a symptom. Now, when you feel the pain around the head region, it's either secondary to some condition that perhaps you have sinusitis. You know, inflammation of sinuses around your head would definitely give you a frontal sort of headache. Or you have a dysfunction of the temporal mandibular joint, then you're going to have a pain in the area of the head just in front of the ear where the jaw joint is. So when we doctors talk about headaches, we usually split them into two different types. The secondary headaches due to some other illness within the body, or the primary headaches, where the primary problem is just the pain itself that you feel. Am I making sense over here?
Yes. So basically what you're saying is either a symptom of something else, or it is a headache because you're having a headache.
That is correct. It's where the problem is just the headache itself. So then if we talk about this primary headaches, there's a few different kinds. And the most well-known ones would be things like a tension headache, where you feel a tight band around your head. You know, sometimes it even gives you a bit of a sensation of sensitivity to light. But this used to be thought of as due to the result of muscular tension around the head region. But recent science seems to suggest otherwise. So that's one type. It happens in about half the population based on epidemiologic studies, depending on where the study comes from. Then the other common type of headache conditions that we often see are things we call migraines or migraines, depending on whether you use American or the British pronunciation.
Right. Okay. So you've got a migraine or a migraine. It really doesn't matter which way you go with it. What causes those?
Well, we don't really know exactly what causes migraines, but there is a clear genetic sort of contribution to migraines. Certain genes have been identified that seem to predispose one to getting migraines, and we do see a familial inheritance. So if you have a migraine, essentially it does mean that you have inherited a brain that is sensitive, that is prone to trigger off attacks of pain or headache every now and then. So whether you get an attack or not, depending, sometimes it comes on by itself, or sometimes it is because you have been triggered to have an attack by certain external stimuli.
I'm wondering, is a migraine on its own, as in you lack sleep, or you're stressed, or you're dehydrated, for example, and that causes a migraine? Or is it actually indicative of something perhaps more insidious?
Well, yeah, so that's a very good question. If you have migraines and you're a migrainer, then you're prone to getting recurrent attacks of migraine-type headaches.
Right.
When a person has a headache, we have to make an assessment whether what you have is a primary headache condition, like a migraine or a tension headache, or there's something insidious in you, like perhaps you caught a sinusitis, so you've got a sinus inflammation in the frontal area. That's why it's painful over the front of the head.
Right.
Or maybe there's something else. For most of the listeners, I think it is important to seek medical attention if you have certain red flags that you encounter in the symptoms. For doctors, red flags means these are symptoms that suggest there is something dangerous going on in you and you need medical attention immediately. So a common one that we raise up is a thunderclap headache, where a headache comes on suddenly, an explosion going off in your head. This is very dangerous. And we do think, and it can suggest aneurysm that has ruptured or leaked in the brain. This can be life-threatening, so always go to the emergency. If you have a new fever and an unexplained headache, that could suggest that you have inflammation or infection of the brain or the covering of the brain called meningitis. And certainly, you should seek medical attention to make sure it is okay. And lastly, if anybody above the age of 50 has got a new headache, this is unusual. You don't usually get primary headaches above the age of 50. Also, seek medical attention.
Okay. All right. So there are some circumstances when it does actually indicate that something more serious than a lack of sleep or stress at work is causing the headaches. Now, in a study, stress has been found as a common trigger for tension-type headaches. And, you know, Singapore can be quite a stressful place to live. Coincidentally, our nation reports a high stress level, which I think we all experienced. And reportedly, we spend a lot of money within the healthcare services to deal with these kinds of headaches, $2.3 billion, or 18% of our total healthcare expenditure on stress-related illnesses, headaches being one of them. As a medical professional, how worrying is this to you?
Wow, I had no idea that this was such a huge amount of money.
I know, right? It blew me away.
Oh my goodness, that blew me away. Well, I guess that just underlines the magnitude of the problem, you know, that we have that people are waiting to spend so much money to seek treatment for those. But I'd like to draw attention to this other thing that is perhaps not our comfort for. A lot of people who treat medical treatment for headaches are actually fairly disabled by their symptoms, mm-hmm. meaning a lot of times they actually have to take leave away from work because of these headaches. And that also means many hours of lost productivity. That means many hours of lost precious weekend time with family and friends, especially in those moments when you really want to be present, like some special events for a loved one, the graduation of a child perhaps, or attending certain important ceremonies or weddings where you really want to be present, but you have to be away because you have a headache. So these are the unaccounted for socioeconomic causes that might not have been accounted for in the $2.3 billion that you mentioned.
Yes, yes. Which makes it even more stunning. And you're right. I mean, perhaps when you look at the dollar value of what it does mean, and headaches is just one aspect of stress-related illnesses, but it's the impact on the individual and their ability to lead their lives, which is a huge impact as well. Now, let's go back to perhaps the everyday living. And let's talk about the impact of headaches and how it can affect everyday living. And then we can talk about some of the treatment options so that we know there's a way out of this.
So we will go to the two most common primary conditions. Those are the ones, problems, headache, right? Mm-hmm. So this would be tension headache and migraines.
Right.
Okay. So essentially, I think lots of people do practice self-medication. You know, if they do self-medicate, so if they feel a headache of some sort, they do tend to get over-the-counter prescriptions like paracetamol for immediate and quick relief. But for people with more common attacks, and usually this would be conditions like migraine, so I use that as the prototype.
Right.
Then you need to seek medical attention. Using this as a prototype, let me explain. Migraines, as I mentioned earlier, is a condition where the brain is hypersensitive. It tends to trigger off a cascade of signals spreading across the brain that gives you things like nausea, vomiting, visual blurring, and of course, the headache. When the attack is severe, it can last for hours and sometimes even days and can totally incapacitate a person. What is probably not known is that when you have a migraine attack, it actually sensitizes the brain such that you're more likely to get another attack. And there are people with such highly sensitized brains who have such frequent attacks, they have it almost every single day of the month. In fact, there is a condition called chronic migraine, which is defined as people having headaches for more than 15 days of the month. So you can imagine how much of their time, how much of their lives is wasted away while they're suffering with the pain, while they cannot function at their best. Generally, for patients with migraines and they have more than about 4 attacks a month, or roughly 1 every week, the general recommendation is that we put people on prophylactic medications to try to suppress these abnormal signals so that you have less attacks coming on every month. And with this prophylactic medications, we find not only do you have less attacks, when you get these attacks of pain, they tend to be milder and more easily treated. which brings us to acute treatment for migraine. When you have a migraine attack, it is important to try to avoid the attack as soon as possible, be it with simple analgesics like paracetamol or non-steroidals like methylphenidate acid and naproxen. The idea is migraine is not just it's a complex process where the pain triggers a lot of downstream effects. And it tends to feed into itself in a feed-forward mechanism. So the earlier you take those medications, the more likely you are to abort the pain, the less you suffer. So that's acute migraine treatment. Well, I hope that is continuing to make sense to you so far.
Yes, yes. Actually, I was going to ask, you said methylphenidate acid, that's Ponstan, isn't it?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Yeah, just try not to use brand names here.
Okay.
Because there are many different brands, you know. Honestly, you know, I don't want the listener to be stuck on a certain brand.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So self-help is good if you get infrequent attacks, you know, like once a month or that sort. But if you get more frequent attacks and the ballpark is about 4 a month or so, it's time to seek medical attention to see whether you have migraine and whether you would benefit from prophylactic treatment. And it's also important to know that after a migraine, in the subsequent few days, people are not exactly at their best. Most of them feel fatigued, tired, and they can't focus or concentrate very well.
Sure.
So to me, this is unnecessary suffering. I mean, we do get some attacks every now and then, but if there's no need to have additional pain, if there's no need to suffer more than what is necessary, why not just get some easy early treatment to stop this attack once and for all? Especially if we know now that the earlier you treat the migraine attack, the earlier you abort it, the shorter the duration of the attack and the less likely you are to suffer the after effects.
Right. Okay. Now, that's treatment options. I suppose with any kind of medical condition, the question is, can we prevent ourselves from getting headaches and migraines? Is there anything that we can change? Lifestyle, diet, what have you? Because it feels like to prevent it is a lot better than to treat it.
Yeah, you are very right. So there's one thing that I have not mentioned, and that is migraine prevention. Okay, so I brought up medications, prophylactic medications that we do to prevent attacks from happening. But for some of us, there are certain identifiable triggers that we can avoid. You know, things like stress and lack of sleep and tiredness is rather universal and ubiquitous in Singapore. So we can't really avoid those even though they are triggers, right? But for some of us, there are certain specific triggers like wine for some people. If they take wine, they tend to get an attack. Cheeses or chocolate for some others. So as part of usual migraine treatment, there will be education on what migraine is, and helping the sufferer or the patient to identify his or her specific triggers. Because what triggers one person may not be the trigger for the other. Then we try to strategize on how we can avoid those triggers if it is possible at all. Okay, so that's one. Other lifestyle things, well, regular exercise seems to help. Excessive caffeine intake seems to increase the risk of one getting headache attacks. So this would be things to look out for that you might be able to modify your lifestyle. And I know for myself, I need coffee every day to work, so cutting down on coffee is not an option.
So, I think a lot of us would say that too.
Yeah, so this is the complexity of managing a migraine, because you're trying to help the sufferer negotiate his or her life, but manage it such that the condition is not triggering his life so much so that he maximizes his quality of life. That's what we try to do.
Right, okay. So there are some lifestyle changes that you can make that might help you prevent these headaches. Now, before I let you go, there's one more statistic that actually was quite stunning to me as a parent. 2 in 3 children will also experience a headache by the age of 15. Do you see that in your practice?
Okay, so that's interesting. I do run an adult neurology practice. So mostly I see people around 15 and above. So children, I do not really see them.
Right.
But headaches in preteens and young children have also been described, and they are particularly tricky to diagnose and manage.
Right.
For a few reasons. Number one, in the young child, the headache may not manifest predominantly as headache. They might show more abdominal symptoms, nausea, vomiting. And there are certain migraine variants that are more common in children, such as cyclical vomiting, where the main symptom of this migraine is not headache, but just recurrent vomiting. So this is something that is, it's going to require another session to talk about, actually.
Oh, okay. Then definitely something to pursue for the future. Now, you've given us some food for thought, particularly for those of us who do suffer from tension headaches. and migraines, were some of the treatment options, some of the most insidious things that we should consider. And you've also given us some food for thought in terms of how to prevent these migraines from starting. Now, for a lot of us, it's too late, because you said earlier in the interview, if you've had one before, there is a likelihood that you'll get one again.
Oh, yes, that is true. Yeah.
So if you've had a migraine in the past, and you put into place some of these, so I'm playing devil's advocate here, right? If you if you've had a migraine in the past, or migraines, plural, in the past, but then you put into practice some of the lifestyle changes you suggested, does that possibly mean that you won't get migraines in the future, or too bad, you already had them, so there's a greater likelihood that they'll come again?
Okay, so basically, if you have a migraine, doctors diagnose this based on certain criteria. Mm-hmm. It's just simplified things. So we identify you as a migrainer. It means we diagnose you as having a brain that is prone to triggering headache attacks. It might attack you once a year. It might attack you once every 2 or 3 years. That right. is fine. You are not cured of migraine. You can get a recurrent attack. What is optional is having frequent attacks for most people. You know,
right.
you don't have to have frequent attacks. The things to do to avoid those are recognizing your triggers and avoiding them. So avoidance of triggers, early treatment during the migraine attack so that you do not allow this feed-forward mechanism to take place, such as migraine takes root and give you a longer and more severe attack and the post-stroke effect of you feeling lousy for the next several days. And having bad attacks increases the chance of you getting another attack in the subsequent few days or the few months. So treating the one acute attack that you get is actually important in this sense. But it doesn't prevent you from ever getting an attack ever in your life again. It's just that if you control it well, you can get back with very, very few attacks or hardly ever any attacks ever. And that's what I've seen for some of my patients, that once you start them on prophylactic medications, you know, I have some of them coming in with headaches like going on twice a week or even more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And once we keep them on prophylactic medications, we get the headache frequency down. Eventually, some of them end up being essentially headache-free. They get one headache like every few months or so.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not on any more medications because you manage to taper it off.
That sounds good to me, Doc. And on that very positive and hopeful note, we've been speaking with Dr. Wee Chi Kiong, a senior consultant, neurologist, and founder at Capenham Neurology. Doctor, thank you for the time and for the information.
Thank you, Clarissa.
I'm Clarissa Montero for the Workday Afternoon. You're with Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.